Hi there, Paul Taylor here, and I'm sure you've been wondering why the podcasts continue not to appear so regularly, and it is to do with the production of About Genesis Volume 2. And the good news is that About Genesis Volume 2, both the paperback and the Kindle version are now available on Amazon for purchase. Yes, you can get both of those on Amazon for purchase. So please head over there. Also have a look at allaboutbooks.store. You'll find that you can buy them there as well. And by the way, the ebook version that you can get on allaboutbooks.store is actually a DRM-free open source version, not quite the same as a Kindle version. It's readable with different apps. It is open source, and on those, I'm trying to make it so that you'll be able to decide for yourself what you would like to pay for the ebook. The paperback I can't do that with because there are certain production costs. They are being produced by Amazon. Amazon KDP, but even there, by the way, I have hold of all the files. I don't release them to the control of Amazon. So if Amazon was to block the book at any time, I would still be able to produce it using a different publisher. At the moment, Amazon is the cheapest option for me, which is why I'm using that. But if they block it at any point, then I will be able to go elsewhere because I hold the rights to that. So those are available. Right, so what am I going to do about the podcast? Well, I really don't have time to record a full podcast for the Proverbs 18:10 podcast, but I had in mind anyway that I was probably over Christmas going to put some of the audio for Bethlehem Star online, and so that's what I'm going to do. Bethlehem Star is a brief book for Christmas and all year round, and it's just about the right time now because you'll get the introductory section of the book now, and then after Christmas you'll get the other bits, and that's appropriate, remember, because the wise men did not journey at Christmas. It was actually a bit later, 2 years later, to probably. But even on the church calendar, we celebrate what they were doing in January rather than in December. Traditionally, if you go back far enough, the wise men's a celebration of the wise men arriving is actually about January the 6th. So that's it's very appropriate for us to do that now. So here is the Proverbs 18:10 podcast, and it's going to be the first two chapters of the audiobook version of Bethlehem's Star. And hope you enjoy it. And if you're saying that you know truth, if you're saying that you know what is truth, then you've got to have something to actually measure that against.
Proverbs 18:10 podcast.
25 feet, 1,000 layers. How many millions of years did that take to form then? The answer is it took 3 hours.
Proverbs 18:10 podcast.
This is the Proverbs 18:10 podcast, presented by me, Paul Taylor, in association with Proverbs 18:10 Media. For all information about the podcast, including where to find the RSS feeds to put into your favorite podcasting software, please visit proverbs1810.org. Enjoy the show.
Chapter 1. A Wandering Star. Did you know the word planet was in the Bible? I was born under a wandering star, sang Lee Marvin. The title does not necessarily imply occult connections, but refers to the medieval cosmological observation, whereby a date of birth would be recorded according to which constellation of the Maseroth zodiac was rising at that part of the year. Each of the Maseroth constellations takes about 30 days to rise, and by circuitous routes gives us the length of our calendar months, which are a little longer than the lunar month of 28 days. Marvin's character, Ben Rumson, declares that he is born under a wandering star to emphasize his nomadic nature. Of course, some stars do indeed wander, while others remain fixed. The wandering stars are few in number, and in medieval cosmology, numbered 7 in all, lunar, moon, Mercury, Venus, Sol, Sun, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. The Greek names for these are Selene, Hermes, Aphrodite, Helios or Apollo, Ares, Zeus, and Kronos. The Greek word for wandering star is planetus, from which we get our word planet. And this word appears just once in the New Testament. In his epistle, Jude describes perverted people who have infiltrated the church. These people are hidden reefs at your love feasts, as they feast with you without fear, shepherds feeding themselves, waterless clouds swept along by winds, fruitless trees in late autumn, twice dead, uprooted, wild waves of the sea, casting up the foam of their own shame, wandering stars, planetae, for whom the gloom of utter darkness has been reserved forever. Jude chapter 1, verses 12 through 13. This would appear to suggest that planets are not good. In fact, planetus is a morally neutral word. It's the restlessness of these pseudo-Christian infiltrators which is being criticized, just as there is nothing inherently wrong with wild waves, though the restlessness of doctrine is being criticized. But I do not need to delve further into the teaching of Jude, as it is simply the existence of biblical knowledge about planets or wandering stars which I am seeking to establish. I have heard a semi-blasphemous joke that Jesus was also born under a wandering star. However, the star of the gospel depends for its existence and meaning on the Messiah, not the other way around. It is odd that Matthew's description of the star does not describe it as a planet, given that Jude knew the word. Perhaps the fact that Bethlehem's star is not referred to as planetus tells us something important about the nature of this object, and we will say more on this later. The Christmas star. The Christmas star is an essential part of our traditional Christmas. Like many towns in the UK, Bridgend in Wales, where I lived for 15 years, held a competition among city centre stores to see which had the best Christmas decorations. The competition was judged by the mayor of Bridgend town. One year, the mayor was a Muslim. You are probably expecting me to say that the competition was a disaster that year. Quite the opposite. Mayor Howis bemoaned the fact that so many supposedly Christian storekeepers had ignored traditional symbols of Christianity and awarded the prize to the only store that had a traditional manger scene in its window display. My mother always made her own manger scene. She used an old shoebox and glued some straw into it to represent the floor of a stable. The shoebox was covered with wrinkled parcel paper to represent stone. The stable was in a cave, she asserted. The figures of Mary, Joseph, a few shepherds, animals, and three wise men were added, with the baby Jesus being placed in a food trough. Finally, a large star was fixed above the sideways turned box. My mother's annual creation was an act of devotion, so it might seem churlish to point out that some of those elements were unbiblical. So I will make the following observation before I close this introductory passage. When I write about the 6 days of the creation week, I lay down the law firmly on the scriptural position. But when I get to Genesis 6 and talk about the Nephilim, I get a little less dogmatic, as there are godly, biblically minded people who take differing views on the nature of the Nephilim. The same applies to the nature of the star and the other elements of the traditional Christmas scene. I will relate to you in these pages what I think the Bible is saying about these matters. But these are secondary doctrinal issues, and I will not label you as a heretic for believing something different about what the star was. I hope you will not label me as a heretic either.
This is the Proverbs 18:10 podcast, episode 42, and today and over the next couple of weeks I'll be playing excerpts from the audiobook version of Bethlehem's Star. That was chapter 1, and we're going straight on to chapter 2.
Chapter 1. A wandering star. Did you know the word planet was in the Bible? I was born under a wandering star, sang Lee Marvin. The title does not necessarily imply occult connections, but refers to the medieval cosmological observation, whereby a date of birth would be recorded according to which constellation of the Maseroth zodiac was rising at that part of the year. Each of the Maseroth constellations takes about 30 days to rise, and by circuitous routes gives us the length of our calendar months, which are a little longer than the lunar month of 28 days. Marvin's character, Ben Rumson, declares that he is born under a wandering star to emphasize his nomadic nature. Of course, some stars do indeed wander, while others remain fixed. The wandering stars are few in number, and in medieval cosmology numbered 7 in all: Lunar, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Sol, Sun, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. The Greek names for these are Selene, Hermes, Aphrodite, Helios or Apollo, Ares, Zeus, and Kronos. The Greek word for wandering star is planetus, from which we get our word planet. And this word appears just once in the New Testament. In his epistle, Jude describes perverted people who have infiltrated the church. These people are hidden reefs at your love feasts, as they feast with you without fear, shepherds feeding themselves, waterless clouds swept along by winds, fruitless trees in late autumn, twice dead, uprooted, wild waves of the sea, casting up the foam of their own shame, wandering stars, planetae, for whom the gloom of utter darkness has been reserved forever. Jude chapter 1, verses 12 through 13. This would appear to suggest that planets are not good. In fact, planetus is a morally neutral word. It's the restlessness of these pseudo-Christian infiltrators which is being criticized, just as there is nothing inherently wrong with wild waves, though the restlessness of doctrine is being criticized. But I do not need to delve further into the teaching of Jude, as it is simply the existence of biblical knowledge about planets or wandering stars which I am seeking to establish. I have heard a semi-blasphemous joke that Jesus was also born under a wandering star. However, the star of the gospel depends for its existence and meaning on the Messiah, not the other way around. It is odd that Matthew's description of the star does not describe it as a planet, given that Jude knew the word. Perhaps the fact that Bethlehem's star is not referred to as planetus tells us something important about the nature of this object, and we will say more on this later. The Christmas Star. The Christmas Star is an essential part of our traditional Christmas. Like many towns in the UK, Bridgend in Wales, where I lived for 15 years, held a competition among city centre stores to see which had the best Christmas decorations. The competition was judged by the mayor of Bridgend town. One year, the mayor was a Muslim. You are probably expecting me to say that the competition was a disaster that year. Quite the opposite. Mayor Harris bemoaned the fact that so many supposedly Christian storekeepers had ignored traditional symbols of Christianity, and awarded the prize to the only store that had a traditional manger scene in its window display. My mother always made her own manger scene. She used an old shoebox and glued some straw into it to represent the floor of a stable. The shoebox was covered with wrinkled parcel paper to represent stone. The stable was in a cave, she asserted. The figures of Mary, Joseph, a few shepherds, animals, and three wise men were added, with the baby Jesus being placed in a food trough. Finally, a large star was fixed above the sideways turned box. My mother's annual creation was an act of devotion, so it might seem churlish to point out that some of those elements were unbiblical. So I will make the following observation before I close this introductory passage. When I write about the 6 days of the creation week, I lay down the law firmly on the scriptural position. But when I get to Genesis 6 and talk about the Nephilim, I get a little less dogmatic, as there are godly, biblically minded people who take differing views on the nature of the Nephilim. The same applies to the nature of the star and the other elements of the traditional Christmas scene. I will relate to you in these pages what I think the Bible is saying about these matters. But these are secondary doctrinal issues, and I will not label you as a heretic for believing something different about what the star was. I hope you will not label me as a heretic either.
So thanks for listening to the first two chapters of Bethlehem's Star. On this episode 42 of the Proverbs 18:10 podcast, tune in next week and we'll have chapter 3. Meanwhile, thanks for listening. God bless you.
Who were these mysterious wise men who came from the east to seek out the Messiah? Why were they looking for the Messiah? What did these Gentiles know about him and who had taught them? Which particular place in the east had they come from? And why did they end up in Jerusalem instead of in Bethlehem? How many wise men were there? The answer to that may surprise you. And why is it that they didn't actually arrive on the Christmas day, but a couple of years later? Hi, my name is Paul Taylor, and I am so intrigued by the accounts of the wise men in Matthew's Gospel, but also in certain places in the Old Testament, that I've written an entire little book about the wise men and about the star that they saw and that meant so much to them. Why were they looking for that particular star? I try to answer that question in my book, Bethlehem's Star, available from Amazon, from allaboutbooks.store, and anywhere that good books are sold, in paperback form, ebook, and audiobook.